From the Ramsey Network and the Fairwinds Credit Union Studio, this is The Ramsey Show. I'm Dave Ramsey. Rachel Cruz, Ramsey personality, number one best-selling author, and my daughter is my co-host today. Thank you for joining us. Alyssa is in Indianapolis. Merry Christmas, Alyssa.
Merry Christmas.
What's up?
I have a question. My husband has basically ruined us financially, and I'm at a breaking point where I need to know if we need to file bankruptcy, if I should take over the bills, if I do, how to start, because I never have done them, or if I should just walk away because I'm just overwhelmed and I can't take all the phone calls and all the stuff that's going on. Like, I'm to the point where either I'm going to leave him or file bankruptcy, or I need help. I don't know.
Wow. So, do you know what is going on? Like, how much debt you have?
I would say probably close to $30,000 to $50,000 in debt. I'm not certain exactly how much. Like I said, he has always done the bills, but my breaking point was last year when he got my car repoed. I looked out the window. My money goes in the bank account every week from my paycheck, and my car was being repoed. And he panicked and had his mother co-sign. The car was in my name, so he ruined my credit, and he had his mother co-sign. Well, now his mother has co-signed on a vehicle for me. And
that was a year ago.
Correct.
Why did you not get involved and the two of you sit down where you knew what the flip was going on from that point forward? Why'd you still stand back?
I tried to get involved. For a little while, we had everything written down, what was going in or what was going out. I was telling him, we need to pay this bill. And it slipped away from me when my kids were in ball season and I was gone 6 days a week till 10 o'clock at night. And I just assumed he was doing what we planned. And I let go again. And then now his mother is contacting me, like, the car payment's one day late. Pay it today. Like, it has to be paid on the day it's due. And I'm like, I'm so done. We talked about this a year ago. What is going on?
Okay, so it's more, Alyssa, that he says he's going to do something and he doesn't. And
correct.
Do you know where you guys are? Like when you say you were $30,000 to $50,000 in debt. Have you had him pull your credit report to at least see, is he lying on that end? Because I'm just wondering if he's not following through with that.
I don't think he's lying on that end. I'm assuming that's what it is because I know basically about what's coming out and what's due. I just don't know when he pays it and if he pays it. I think he's gotten so behind everything's got to leave.
And what's he saying? Is he saying, why is he late?
He just says that the money's not there. Like, but what I don't understand is he works 50 to 80 hours a week. And works.
What I don't understand is why you're still sitting on the sidelines and haven't gotten involved.
You're
really good at standing back and throwing rocks at him, and you have no idea when all you got to do is walk in there and sit down with him, and the two of you get out a yellow pad and figure this out.
I've tried.
Oh, you haven't. I had ball 6 days a week. Bull crap. Your household's falling apart. Kids can't go to ball if the household's falling apart. You sit down, get out a yellow pad, and the two of you work on it.
I agree.
So why haven't you done that?
Because I don't know where to start. I've never done the bills, so I don't know.
I want you to take them over. I want the two of you to sit down and figure out where it's going. Because it's pretty simple. You both have an income coming in, and in your mind, it's not. We don't think he's wasting it. It sounds like there's not enough money coming in to pay the bills.
It does sound like that.
Yeah. Do you know, Alyssa?
So I don't know that your husband has ruined your finances. I think the two of you have ruined your finances.
Okay.
No, I don't think you need to divorce him. Poor guy, he's trying to carry this whole thing by himself, and he doesn't know what he's doing either. You're both lost. And so, yeah, you guys have got...
Yeah, and there's obviously a level of broken trust. If your husband says he's going to do something and he doesn't, though, and doesn't say, hey, this car payment can't be paid. We have no money. I need help, right? If he's just taking over and not bringing her in at all, which again, Alyssa, you have to be the one doing it too. You may have to be the one pushing the buttons. You may have to be the one that actually is paying the car payment and is paying the bills for
now,
a season.
If I were to just interview you guys separate from this whole situation, who would we say that the detail-oriented person is, him or you?
I would say it would be me.
Yeah, your
so
underwear
busy.
Drawer's folded. His isn't.
Correct. He's so busy working. It's not that he's a bad person.
Ahora continuamos con el podcast. Pero antes, ¿sabías que solo uno de cada cinco oyentes llega al final de un episodio? Por eso, resumimos tus podcasts favoritos. Entra en nuestra web para saber más.
What's he working on?
Him like that. He
he's working at the job 50 to 60 hours a week. Okay, so yeah, what does he make, hon?
He probably makes about $120,000 a year.
Okay. So number one thing is
we need to take
probably out of the equation. By the before the sun goes down, you need to know what your husband makes. Exactly. Okay. What do you make?
I make about $32,000 a year.
Okay. So we have, let's pretend that that's correct, and we have $152,000 a year to work with, right? Okay.
Yep.
Now, then let's start spending that. The first thing we buy is food each month. Okay. The second thing we buy is lights and water, and those are all paid on time. There's no reason they can't be paid on time. How much is your house payment?
It's, I think, around $1,500.
Okay, no thinking anymore. You need to know.
Okay.
Not around.
Okay,
by the end of the day, you're going to know it's $1,532.46 freaking cents.
Understanding the financial strain of juggling bills and emotions is crucial before diving into the next topic. This leads us to Brayden in Phoenix, who's grappling with a problematic rental property. Will he find a way out, or is he stuck in a cycle of bad financial decisions? Let's find out.
That's not managing your money. This is emotional survival mode. You're stuck because you're ignoring the emotions. Jade Washaw, in her new book, What No One Tells You About Money. And you're going to love this book. I guarantee it. All right. Brayden is in Phoenix. Hey, Brayden, what's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Better than I deserve. How can I help?
I was given a rental property that's been nothing but a headache, and I'm just wondering if I should allow the bank to take it.
I'm sorry. How are you given a rental property that has a mortgage?
I worked for a company that did flips, and they kind of gave me it. I was young and I didn't know what I was doing. And so I just basically took over the debt. They covered the down payment and it's racked up some credit card debt as well.
Okay. So what is owed on the house?
$519,000.
But you did not get the mortgage.
The mortgage is in my name. It was, the down payment was.
Oh, so if you give it back to them, they're going to foreclose on you and sue your butt. You understand that, right?
Yes, sir.
That would not be a good plan, sir. What's the house worth?
I had it listed at 540, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't sell. So I would guess $500,000. I overpaid for it.
Who do you? Yeah, shock. And how old are you?
I am 21.
So these flippers are these TikTok morons, aren't they?
Yeah, he was like my mentor, and I called him one of my best friends at one point. But he was just a little older than I was.
Yeah, friends like that. Who needs enemies? Okay. Oh, man, I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah.
Who do you owe the money to? What kind of a mortgage is it? FHA, VA, conventional, bank loan? What is it?
It's a conventional mortgage.
Okay.
Are you able to make the house payment, Brayden? Are you able to stay current on it?
I am not. So I'm actually like 60 days delinquent right now. I am self-employed. I made $25,000 last month, and so I put that into a credit card payment instead of paying the. So it's a rental property right now. So I have renters in it. With renters in it, I lose $1,500 a month.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So your only way out, because you owe more on it than it's worth, net, is to do what's called a short sale. Have you ever heard that phrase?
Yes, sir. As I work in real estate, I know a lot about it. I've talked to a lot of people who have suggested that.
Okay. Do you actually know how to execute a short sale, sir?
Yes. I know someone who, that's all they do. They're an agent here in town.
Okay. All right. Would they be willing to help you?
Yes, but they said not with tenants in place. And my tenant's lease is until March.
Well, I think you call your tenants up and say, hey, guys, the house is getting foreclosed on. So
you may want to find a new place.
You may want to find a new place.
It's okay. only three months.
Yeah, the biggest issue is it was leased through my mom's Airbnb account, and so I was afraid it was going to hit that and destroy her Airbnb business as well.
Yeah. Man, y'all just stacked stupid on top of stupid, didn't you? Man, I'll tell you. I'm sorry. I've done worse. That's what I'm just feel bad for you. It's like every time I bring something up, there's another hook in it, right? So, if I'm in your shoes, I quit paying the payments and I run the renters off.
Okay.
As best I can. Just by telling them, hey, guys, it's going to get foreclosed on. You may want to look for a place to live, and they'll probably up and leave. Well, I'll let you out of the lease because I don't want you to get hurt. If you want to go, if you want to go early, I'll understand.
Yeah.
And then quit paying the payments and then start the short sale. If your friend won't help you while the tenants are in place, go to RamseySolutions.com and get a Ramsey trusted agent that knows how to do short sales, and they'll help you.
Yeah.
Okay. The tenants don't have to be gone for you to begin to negotiate a short sale. It just makes it easier to show the house.
Well, and if you're in that world, Braden, you should know a lot of people. You said a lot of people have suggested this. I'm sure there's a lot of realtors that you know that, you know, I mean, a Ramsey trusted agent, I would feel good about just because I know the type of people they are. But finding someone should be relatively easy.
So, and basically the short sale is you get an offer on the property that is net lower than the actual balance, and you submit that to the mortgage company, and they realize, having done an appraisal, that they're not going to get any more than that after they foreclose on you. So they take that, and you are looking for, and you remember this phrase, without recourse.
Yes, sir.
Because that means they don't come after you for the difference.
Okay, yes. And another thing on top of that is the old boss, he paid his best friend to co-sign for me. So he's kind of scared and going downhill with me. So he's kind of pressured me into paying the payments previously, but I've just told him I'm done.
Yeah, well, tell him to talk to your old boss.
Yeah.
Who set this up. You didn't talk him into doing it. The other guy did.
And he did it. That's the stupid thing about co-signing. Sucks for him.
So let me ask you this. Okay, you co-sign for a 21-year-old who's overpaying for a piece of property, and then you're shocked that you get stung. Okay, I'm just saying. Put together by a bunch of flippers. Yeah, this is a good way to get screwed. Yeah. And I'm so sorry you're going through this. The great news is that when you're the other side of it, you will have learned several lessons if you learn them. And you need to write them out. I'll tell you what some of them are. Never co-sign, never accept a co-sign, never buy a piece of property with nothing down. Don't borrow up to your eyeballs and expect a piece of real estate to work. It doesn't work. It doesn't cash flow. There's no possible way this nothing down TikTok crap works. It's a
don't math get in the Airbnb business either, Braden. Don't follow your mom's footsteps.
Yeah, and quit looking for all the get rich quick stuff.
Yeah.
Navigating family finances can be complex, especially when past decisions weigh heavily on the present. With a father striving to balance responsibility with providing for his children, tensions rise as he contemplates the impact of financial choices. Moving forward, the discussion shifts to effective budgeting strategies while fostering resilient kids. How can they prioritize financial well-being without sacrificing family experiences?
That's what I'm really hoping.
No, it's not. 130 minus 30 is 100. Wow.
And then after taxes. After taxes, you'll be living on 70 or whatever.
Oh, well.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't use the excuse of my children are going to suffer, because your children are going to suffer more watching a father and mother who are irresponsible.
They watch everything we do.
They're going to do what you do.
More is caught than taught. They're watching you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that I'm more concerned about that than anything else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you guys do what you want to do, but that would be my motivation.
And again, let me say this too. I mean, and again, I think I'm just in the middle of it because we're kind of in the Christmas season with little kids at home. But, and even looking back on my childhood, the things that you remember, the memories that you have, the things that actually shape who you are as an adult, of what we're saying, that bring you to the workplace, that bring you into a marriage, that bring you as a parent, is not the birthday gifts, right? Like the gift you give your kids is you and the time that is spent together doing a puzzle, even, right? I mean, it's like,
I was being interviewed this morning.
I think it's
another,
a big deal. It really is.
I was being interviewed on a radio station this morning, and the guy was asking me about this video that's going around about what Christmas gift you get last year, and the kid doesn't know.
Yeah.
But what experience, they remember every detail about the trip. And I said, well, your sister's 40. And she could not tell you a single gift she got at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. But she can tell you at 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, 100% of those Christmases at midnight, we were in church lighting candles on Christmas Eve.
Falling asleep
and the
in
kids
the pew
are asleep in my lap. And she can give you that memory and paint it so clearly in HD.
Yes.
30 years later.
I remember mom spilling wax on a lady's coat in front of us one year when I was probably 6 or 7.
Yeah, the candle dripped on a mink coat.
Yeah, I mean, it's things like that that you remember and that shape who you are.
But we don't know what we got for Christmas that year. So it's not to say don't buy something for Christmas.
No, but it's
just out of control.
But it is the mindset and the perspective that I think has gotten so out of whack that if we don't do this or buy this for our kids, somehow we're harming them. And what I'm saying is, an experience that has to cost nothing is the thing that's going to shape and mold you. And it's the Tuesday nights at home and having a family dinner. Like, those are the things that create good, healthy adults. It's not the crap that you buy. It's really not.
Exactly.
And is bowling fun? Yes, absolutely. Go, take them bowling. But again, even the bowling experience is not the thing that shapes who they are. It's having a dad who is present, who is talking to them, who knows them, is relational. Like those, like literally that is what shapes you as an adult, as a parent. And I think we get so wrapped up in all this buying crap that I'm like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't.
But it does help me. It always helped me to reframe it to say, I'm not trying to raise great kids. I'm trying to raise kids that are great adults. It changes the discussion.
Who are resilient during hard times. Yeah, maybe they have a hard year because they don't get to buy what they want. But that's resilience.
They heard the word no? What? We can't say that. That's illegal.
Y'all are doing great, Bree, though. To your points, yes, you are starting. If you guys do this, you're changing the trajectory not only of those teenagers, but that toddler that's in your house, too. So, yeah, we're cheering you guys on for sure.
Owning a business can be a heavy load. You want to serve your customers well, make a healthy profit, and grow. And your team, family, and customers are all counting on you. And now everybody's talking about AI like it's magic. And you're wondering how to keep up. You're carrying a lot. But you don't have to do it all alone. That's where NetSuite comes in. Over 43,000 businesses, including Ramsey Solutions, use NetSuite to lighten the load by bringing all their numbers into one system. Accounting, inventory, CRM, payroll, the works. And now NetSuite's AI takes it further, automating busy work, flagging inventory issues, spotting cash flow problems in real time, and catching risks before they hit. So you're not just closing the books faster. You're making decisions confidently. And when your numbers are right, that takes a lot of pressure off your shoulders. And yeah, switching systems is a big move. But NetSuite's Suite Success process gets you up and running fast. Go to netsuite.com/Ramsey for a free product tour and to schedule time with a NetSuite rep. That's netsuite.com/Ramsey. David is in Indianapolis. Hi, David. How are you?
Good, Dave. How are you?
Better than I deserve. What's up?
Long story short, I just checked my statements from my financial advisor last month been the first time in a couple months. Anyway, looking at them, it only looks like I've seen about 7% growth this year, and I was wondering if I should fire him and look for someone else.
What does he have you invested in? Do you know?
It's supposed to be aggressive growth, supposedly. As far as the individual funds, I'm not 100% sure on.
Yeah.
I just figured this out. I just figured this out on Friday.
Have you contacted him and asked any questions?
I haven't. I did not ask about the retirement. I did contact him to figure out why. This is another issue. My deposits I made into my money market account were not being actually used, and they were just sitting there not gaining interest either.
Oh, gosh. You had money in your money market account that he has access to that he's supposed to pull each month money from to invest, and he's not done that.
Okay.
Correct.
There's a couple things wrong with the equation, all right? You probably should fire him, but not for the reasons that you're saying. You're griping about the rate of return, and you don't even know what the mutual fund is. It's your responsibility to know what that is. Your financial advisor's job is not to babysit you. Their job is to teach you, and you make your decisions. And then, if you don't like the returns, it's due to your choices. But you don't even know what's going on. You just toss the money over the fence and hope he handled it well. And that's a good way to lose everything.
So, I guess my next question would be something that you would... Is that something, you know, so I pay somewhat close attention to the market, listen to you guys, listen to other financial podcasts. What kind of opened my eyes to was I seen that the S&P 500 has grown 14.5%, something like that this year.
17. And you made seven, so something screwed up. Yeah, I agree with you, something screwed up. But here's my point, okay? I do not have any mutual funds with my financial advisor that I didn't choose.
Navigating financial choices requires a clear understanding of each investment's role in your portfolio, insight that was missed in the earlier discussion. Now, the conversation shifts to the rising skepticism among younger generations towards traditional financial advisors, exploring how they can manage their money effectively in today's economic landscape. What alternatives are there to conventional investing?
Absolutely. But I would even bring that to a financial advisor, say, I have this over here with me, put that in my portfolio so I can look at the whole picture, right? So I don't know, ours has helped us, you know, do things that I'm like, oh, well, that's creative. I didn't think to go here and here. And they know about, you know, whether it's, you
but
know,
again,
loopholes or ways to invest. And it's great.
But they don't,
though.
They didn't call you up and tell you they did it.
No.
They call
no,
you
no,
up
no.
and say, here's an idea. You all understand the idea. And then do we implement the idea?
Yes, but there is
and whether it's a mutual fund purchase or whether it's a tax move or whatever it is.
But David,
a
lot of
people look for people to manage your money. You manage your money with the help of an advisor. Yes, you can outperform the market if you do that.
Okay, can I tell you though, there's a lot of that, of what David just said, moving right now, and people aren't wanting financial advisors. They're just wanting to go and invest themselves, opening a Vanguard. That's what a lot of people are feeling.
Well, the S&P 500, the Bogleheads have been around forever. Okay, that's not new.
No, I know it's not new, but I'm saying more and more people are not the traditional, hey, I'm going to go and I need a financial advisor to get me in the space.
You don't need one to get you in the space. You need one to maximize the space.
That's it. Well, that's what I'm saying, though, is that it's more. I'm hearing more and more people.
People that have a financial advisor have a higher likelihood of staying in when the news on the when Trump burps and the market goes down. They stay in, and the people that stay in are the ones that make money, and they have a higher probability of picking better mutual funds because they're getting actual learning. Your SmartVestor Pro on RamseySolutions.com has to have the heart of a teacher, or we won't put him in Ramsey Trusted. We won't put him in there, mm-hmm. or her in there, okay? And so, and most of them make a percentage of the amount under management is what they get, usually 1% or so. That's about what they get paid. And so they need to be doing something that outperforms by 1% the market. Otherwise, they're not worth their money,
that's right,
so to speak. So, you get in that. But, you can't. It's the Bogle started Vanguard, and they're called Bogleheads. And his premise was correct. He was a genius, was that the S&P 500 outperforms more than half of the mutual funds. So if you just blindly go pick a mutual fund, you'd have been better off to pick the S&P 500 index, mm-hmm. was his point.
Yeah.
And that's why he started a no commission, no load S&P 500 at Vanguard, and it's the famous thing in the stock market history. And so people that say, I'm not going to think about this, I'm just going to dump it into S&P 500, mm-hmm. and I'll at least make what the stock market makes, and I'll outperform more than 50% of the mutual funds by doing that.
Yeah.
Those are called bogleheads, okay? And they're not new, just because TikTok came along.
No, I'm not saying they're new. I'm just saying I'm hearing it more and more. People have the access to it.
I've heard Dave Ramsey's a crook for 35 years because I told people not to do that and go pay a commission to outperform bogleheads. And Dave Ramsey's not a crook. I'm a genius.
Yes, you are.
Welcome back to the Ramsey Show in the Fairwinds Credit Union Studios. There's a lot of discussion in America today about the 20-somethings, the Gen Zers, and the millennials having an affordability crisis. A lot of it is centered towards home buying, but it's also just in general, life is too expensive. We don't make enough. Capitalism is failing us and whatever. And there is a serious pinch on these two generations, but it is not because things are too expensive. It is because the large banks and the car companies and the U.S. Congress have conspired to screw them. We have record credit card debt. The most ever. What's in your wallet, says the actor on the commercial over and over and over and over again. They've been brainwashed to believe by the big banks that if I use a credit card, I can prosper with the points and the airline miles, which is mathematically ludicrous. They've been brainwashed by the lending industry that if they have a high FICO score, that they are somehow winning, when 100% of the mathematical items in the algorithm for the FICO score are debt-related. You can inherit $1 million and your FICO score doesn't change a point. Your boss could give you $1 million a year raise in your salary and your FICO score doesn't change a point. It is not a financial health score. It is how much you've been screwed by Citibank and Fifth Third and these large banks and Ford Motor Company, and General Motors Credit, and Chrysler Credit, and Lexus Credit. Need I go on with all the credits? 20% of the borrowers that left the car lot last month left with a car payment over $1,000 a month. When you have a $1,000 a month car payment, or three, and you're really running up the credit card debt because you're chasing the FICO score, that you've been taught to do by these villains. You have affordability issue. Add to that, we've got 18-year-olds that are loaned $100,000, and the loan is guaranteed to be paid by the U.S. government. What bank won't make this loan? Because they're 100% guaranteed to get their money. It's called a guaranteed student loan. And so, of course, they're going to want to loan this money. So they loan $100,000 to an 18-year-old who can't buy beer. And they choose a school based on the fact that the street is pretty in front of the school. This is combined to create two generations that are completely handcuffed by these mega banks, the U.S. Congress, and these car companies. And there's where your affordability crisis is coming from. Yes, if you're in Gen Z, you're feeling a pinch, but you also signed up for it, darling. And these companies are screwing you.
Understanding the consequences of unchecked bank practices is crucial as it frames the discussion on financial responsibility. In the upcoming part, Eugene and Carol will share their remarkable journey from living paycheck to paycheck to boasting a net worth of over $2 million. How did they achieve this success?
Christmas is almost here. $13 career assessments, $12 for questions for humans cards, and $7.99 for audiobooks and ebooks. RamseySolutions.com/store. Eugene and Carol are with us. Hey, guys, what's up?
Hey, Dave. Hey, Rachel. We're so excited to be here.
We're glad to have you. I see on my screen you guys are baby steps millionaires. Tell us what your net worth is.
So, Dave, it is about $2,326,000.
Good for you. Give me a little breakdown on that. How's that $2 million broken out?
Yes, so about $950,000 is the home, which we bought 12 years ago for $375,000. So we're blessed with that. A retirement, a little bit about $1 million, 003. Emergency fund, $98,000 for the college. We have done for the kids about $175,000. We have two of them. They're 13 and 12. And in cars, we have three vehicles. We'll pay for about $70,000, three of them combined.
And how much of this did you all inherit?
Zero.
Zero. Nice. I like it. Okay. And your ages right now, how old are you?
I'm 44.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 47.
Cool. And what were your careers or are your careers?
I have an MBA.
And I'm in sales.
And you're what, Eugene?
I'm in sales.
Sales, okay. And what was your career, Carol, with your MBA?
I worked in marketing. I worked in marketing, director of marketing for a long time.
And what's the most you guys have made as a couple in a year?
About $200,000.
Okay. And what's the worst year you had as a couple? Income?
Probably in the beginning when we first started, we were each making about $30,000. A year.
Okay, so 60 to 200 was the range. You're 44 and 47. You have 2.3 million. You did not inherit any of it. What was your GPA in college?
Mine was 3.8 and Eugene 3.2.
Okay. All right. Smart, but not geniuses. I like it. Very good.
No, okay. Not at all.
What do you drive, Eugene?
So I have, after becoming millionaires, I bought for my wife a brand new van, Toyota Sienna. She wanted it. We upgraded her 8-year-old Sienna. And I just got you're going to love this, Rachel, a Model Y, a Tesla.
I knew I liked you. I liked you. And the minivan. Y'all are like our favorite.
No, you're running an 8-year-old minivan, right?
That we have bought pre-over doing the baby steps. Yeah.
Oh, you bought the van 8 years ago.
Yeah, when they got the first
one. The old one. Yeah.
So, Dave, when we started the baby steps, we downgraded. I had a really leather seat interior minivan, and we went down the cloth seats because we had to get on the plan. And so after we became debt free, Eugene's like, okay, we're going to go buy you your dream car, which is a van.
Yes.
Seats and all the bells and whistles.
I get it.
Okay, so you're in Miami, and I hear an accent. What is your heritage?
I'm Colombia.
Our parents are from Colombia. Mm. Carol was actually born here in New Jersey.
Beautiful family. We see the picture
now. But I came from Colombia when I was 19 years old.
Okay.
With two rolling bags and $90 in my pocket. And, you know, we've been blessed.
Amazing.
Yeah, you've worked your tails off.
The American dream is what you've experienced.
Yes.
It's incredible.
Congratulations. I'm so proud of y'all. Way to go, guys.
You.
Well, I got to ask you, and I know the answer, but I got to ask you, can it still be done today?
Absolutely, it can still be done. Sometimes you ask people, what would you say to your younger self? And
yeah.
So, it's, this is built on on consistency, not on income. You got to get on financial peace, get on a written budget. You know, you have to really drink the Kool-Aid. We teach FCU and we tell people you cannot do this-ish. You can't do this-ish. You have to do it fully. You have to live below your means. It absolutely can be done. Mm-hmm. You sometimes ask people, how do you feel to be a millionaire? Honestly, guys, it doesn't feel like we're millionaires. Most of our money is tied up in retirement and real estate, so we can't.
You're driving
really
an 8-year old Toyota.
Our two are in a budget. Even our two kids, they have their own folder in the Every Dollar app.
Yes. Yes. We go to $6 movies on Tuesdays. Our kids joke around that we still live like no one else in the Jeep side, that when are we going to go to the other side? So, yeah, it's been such an adventure. We're so honored to talk to you.
Before diving deeper, crucial insights were shared about the transformative journey, starting from nearly nothing to building a millionaire's mindset, emphasizing wisdom in financial decisions. This sets the stage for exploring the balance between generosity and debt management, as Courtney seeks guidance on living generously while tackling her credit obligations. How can one serve others while remaining financially responsible?
Well, I mean, I cannot visualize having a car that I have to plug in the wall. I can't get my head around it, and I can't visualize not having the thrill of driving. I love driving a really good car.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and especially a nice curvy Tennessee mountain road, right? It's a lot of fun.
You
for
think
me.
You're going to die in passenger seat?
But yeah, I think, you know, what is it? Phoenix has got all of the Wegos or whatever they're called now. What are they called? The self drivers? Yeah.
Oh, the like yes, what? it's like a taxi.
Waymo. I got close. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like Henry Cloud sent me a picture of riding and no.
That's different. Weird. That's weird. Pretty crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? Luke 16:10-11. Nelson Mandela said, money won't create success. The freedom to make it will. Courtney is with us in Tampa. Hi, Courtney. Merry Christmas.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure. What's up?
I took Financial Peace University earlier this year, and I'm in baby step two with about $33,000 of remaining credit card debt.
Good for you.
But I'm wanting to live, thank you, in baby step seven. So how do I handle wanting to live generously, especially with, you know, the recent shutdown and people struggling and working in an area where I think part of it is like, I have cash in my pocket now and I want to, you know, give it to the guy that's sitting outside 7-Eleven or something. But how do I live generously and feeling like I have the means to do so, but still have my own debt to tackle?
Well, you know, baby step two is we're living on a detailed tight budget. We're not going out to eat. We're not going on vacation, and any money we can squeeze out of anything, extra work or underspending or anything, we throw at the smallest debt, which would not mean there's cash in your pocket.
Understood.
So that means it's going on the smallest debt. Now, it's a really good question, though. You've got a great heart. And I will tell you that over the years of doing this, that the people that are motivated by potentially becoming outrageously generous do some of the best work of getting out of debt and building wealth, because they have a good reason, a good why for building wealth. The idea that you want to be a baby step seven and give away not just pocket change, but serious money and help somebody in a serious way. That motivator is so noble. It's such a calling on your heart that it will lead you out of debt, a higher probability of getting out of debt and faster than something that you wanted selfishly. So you're an incredible lady. I predict big things for you. What Sharon
Thank
and I
you.
Did when we were at this stage, because we had the same heart, we desperately wanted to be generous and had no money because all of it was going on debt. So all we did was we just did acts of service.
And you tithed.
And so we tithed. Yeah. We give a tenth of our income. That's a baseline. But above that, we didn't walk around and, you know, we didn't. But maybe we couldn't support the homeless shelter with a $50,000 gift, but we could go serve soup. And maybe we couldn't couldn't give the widow down the street that had lost her husband, you know, a $10,000 gift to help her with anything, but we could cut her grass and clean out her gutters. And we did.
And make her dinner or watch the kids while she goes out or something.
You can make dinner. Dinner doesn't cost much of anything to make dinner for somebody. Or watch somebody's kids, like Rachel said. There's all kinds of acts of service that you can do. And honestly, it comes out of the exact same muscle, the exact same place in your heart that giving monetary gifts does.
Yes, absolutely.
Generous people are the ones that hold the door for you at the supermarket.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely. And I do love your heart in it, Courtney. And I think the way I would be positioning it in my mind is that if I make a sacrifice right now by cleaning this up, getting out of debt so that I'm in a good place financially, you're going to be able to give more, obviously, than now. But even if you lived with debt for the rest of your life, you would always just have some change in your pocket to give the guy. Versus if you were debt-free and you were on a plan and giving was one of those motivators or a priority for you where you're going to be giving more than maybe the average person that gives, you're going to have the means to be able to do that and even make a bigger impact for somebody, right? I mean, to go into that single mom and pay her lights for a year, you know, you'll be able to write a check and just do that, but you can't do that right now, right? And if you live how you're living now, you'll never be able to get to that place where you'll have a lot to be able to give. So there's something about being debt-free that frees up your income, not just obviously for yourselves, but for other people of what you're saying. So you get to do even more impact when you are debt-free.
You guys always hear us say, live like no one else so that later you can live and give like no one else. So you have a better quality of life and a higher level of generosity than anyone else because you paid a price to get there. And the biblical verse that caused us to come up with that saying is, no discipline seems pleasant at the time. And listen to this from a generosity perspective. But it yields a harvest of righteousness. What's more righteous than generosity? I mean, what's more holy than generosity? Not many things, you know? And so you're really touching the part of your heart that God installed. He installed the whole thing, but the part of him that's most, the part of your heart that's most like God when you're giving. He gave his only son.
That's right? I mean, that's his example. He was serving constantly to people. And so, yeah, there is that element that is so real.
That's all for today. Visit podsummarizer.xyz and start creating summaries of your own podcast in just seconds. Don't miss it.